From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Man Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Man Cometh.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is The Dice Man Cometh for Thursday the 30th of April. It is episode 69. We're not making any jokes about that. No. What? No, what? Because I'll tell you why. Because we're not calling Tats Lotto, and we are trying to present a mature adult show about grown-ups who just happen to like to occasionally pretend that they're wizards.
I'll have you know that's Goliath Paddle. The Dins.
Listen, I'm not...
Bjorn!
I'm not addressing you... Okay, my name's Trent.
I'm Mark. I'm either Pjorn, the Paladin Goliath, or I'm Hobnob, the Halfling Elf.
You are Garth. You will use your real... human name, please.
We are grown-ups.
Mature, thank you.
Party on, Garth.
What's coming up in episode 69 tonight?
We've got an action-packed episode full of goodness from top to bottom and the other way around. We have got Eos, the fabulous Eos from the Board Game Nights podcast, who went to the Gathering of Friends, the exclusive... the most exclusive gaming con in the world. We're going to hear all about it. We're going to talk about what we've been playing lately. We are going to draw our competition.
What competition is that, Mark?
The Grail Games Grail Game Competition.
Wow.
And we're going to talk about lots of other things, iOS and stuff, and yeah, that's it.
And this is the Queens of the Stone Age to get us started this evening and the lost art of keeping a secret. Edge Radio 99.3 FM, classic Quatsa to start us off on the Dice Man Cometh, the show that talks board games and all kinds of crazy nerdy stuff. I just got accused of playing a mellow song to start the show. Buddy, you wait till next week. You wait.
Hang on, Quatsa?
Queens of the Stone Age.
Right, okay.
Showing your age there, Mark.
Yeah, okay. Wow. No, I know who Queen of the Stone Age are. I've just never heard them called Quatsa before.
See, we talk all kinds of crazy stuff aside from board games, music, and also just crazy facts. I was startled, I tell you, to learn that the residents of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, while being US citizens, actually do not have the right to vote in the US general election.
Isn't that just incredible? But they can vote in other parts.
And yet, ironically, have one of the highest voter turnouts.
Yeah, we've certainly done some research.
Absolutely.
Do you want to tell us what it's about then, Mark? Well, why did we do this research?
Because, gentlemen, Carl and I did introduce you both to the epic classic game I think every fair-dinkum gamer has to try, Puerto Rico. It plays 2 to 5 players. It was came out in 2002 and designed by Andreas Seyfarth. It is ranked number 5 on Board Game Geek for all-time games and strategy games.
It's also the oldest game in the top 20. It's been in that top 5 spot. It's been in the top 20 longer than any other game.
Yep, absolutely. And the only other one that I thought that was close is El Grande, which I think is number 23, and is from 98. Now, would you believe... it was nominated for the Spiel des Jahres in 2002, but it didn't win. Do you know what won? Villa Paletti. Do you know that game?
No. Never heard of it.
It's like Architect, but without the blow-up club and the fun. It's like the Euro version of Architect. And do you know what it's rated now on Board Game Geek?
No.
1014. And take that, Villa Paletti!
Talk about Puerto Rico.
Wraps it up for the Spiel des Jahres.
But I mean, I guess the thing is, back in those days, there wasn't the Kenner Spiel. And that award is for family games. So it is a slightly more complex game, but look, it's fantastic. It was one of the first more complex games that I was introduced to back into about 2005, 2006.
And the classic Euro archetype, is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, it was the first game to really employ this mechanism of role selection. So you've got a number of roles. You've got the mayor, you've got the settler, you've got the builder, you've got the craftsman, you've got the captain, you've got the prospector, and you've got...
The trader,
that's right. And each round you pick a role, you get to do that thing, and everyone else gets to do that thing, which is the interesting thing. But the person who picks it gets a little bonus. So it's quite even in that way.
That's a mechanic that has been used in so many games since then. Race for the Galaxy, Twilight Imperium.
Yeah, and this was the first game to use those mechanics. Right.
So it's hugely influential.
Yeah, it's absolutely groundbreaking. So it's a story of the port of Puerto Rico where you're bringing in colonists, let's call them, the little brown circles that aren't slaves, apparently. Well, they seem very slave-like to me. You're bringing them in to work in the town and in the plantations to create goods, to sell, to also ship back to Mother Spain, to get your victory points. You're building buildings in the town. There's a couple of different ways to win. One is by getting the most buildings and victory points that way. Another is by shipping goods and getting it that way. But look, there's so much depth of strategy in this game. It's not a difficult game. But in terms of strategy, there's a lot. And it's interesting, Scott Nicholson used to talk about Puerto Rico poo-poo heads. And, you know, one of the reasons he stopped playing sort of serious games and went back into more fun games was all the Puerto Rico poo-poo heads who would say, hang on, the most obvious choice for you is to pick the X role, but you didn't pick that and you've screwed everyone's strategy.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I noticed about it is that you've really got to figure out a balance of, am I going to do what's best for me, or am I just going to play the game to screw over my opponents?
Mm.
And that seems to be completely clear. And when you were teaching us the game, Mark, one of the first things you said was, always just do the action that you're going to do that no one else can. That's it. Doesn't matter whether it's the right action, the thing that
doesn't benefit anybody else.
Correct. Yeah, just do that. And I mean, clearly, it's a strategy that obviously worked because I won the game. But it's something
who came last? So maybe it doesn't work.
I think that's one of the things that makes this a winner, though. I really enjoyed this. I don't always enjoy Euros, let's face it. But I do think that, you know, this is suffering from a bit of an image problem, really, Puerto Rico. Because if you ask someone, do they want to invade an alien planet? They might say yes. Do you want to ship in slaves to grow tobacco and try to ship it to other ports efficiently? Doesn't sound that sexy. Doesn't really convey what it is that you're doing. Well, I think it's a game in need of a makeover. You know what I mean?
And look, it's interesting because they brought out a limited edition in 2011,
which
sort
is
of
very
the
nice,
10th anniversary edition.
Not
which
that nice.
They've updated the artwork. They've updated the components. It's got beautiful metal coins as the doubloons instead of the normal little cardboard ones. But you're absolutely right.
It is little model buildings or something.
I mean, it is that sort of tired making goods and shipping theme that is so Euro and so passe these days, but it's just a fantastic game. If you can get past that sort of slightly boring theme, I think it's got such a depth of strategy. I love it. That's Puerto Rico.
Yeah. I really like it. I think it's showing its age a bit. I think the turn order is a bit boring because it's just always going round and round in a circle, and it seems to be all you want to do is just screw over the person who's going to go next. So again, rather than going, what's best for me?
Yes.
It's, oh, Trent's to my left. What's he going to do? I'm going to take that role so he can't do it. I think, the artwork needs a bit of a makeover as well. And I also think it can really suffer from a bit of analysis paralysis. Just there is ample opportunity for thinking. But again, you don't know what roles are going to be available until it's your turn. So whole strategy for the round could be just thrown into chaos because, Mark, you've taken the traitor role. That was my role.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
In a world of boring Euros that I just can't stand the sight or even the thought of, I will play this one, Puerto Rico, anytime.
Yeah.
And for a game that's 14, 15 years old, sure, it's a little dusty, but I think it's standing up really, really well. It's an elegant little system, and if you've never tried it, then do so.
Completely agree. And you play this game, and you look at a whole bunch of newer games, and you go, yep, I've seen that mechanic,
Exactly,
and
yeah.
you can take it back to Puerto Rico. You can also take it back to San Juan by the same designer, because you look at Race for the Galaxy and the mechanic in San Juan, and they're virtually identical.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to try Puerto Rico, I do believe there's an iOS version.
There is iOS, and it's also on Board Game Arena, which Mark and I are in a couple of games of. I'm going to try and get 2 for 2.
And talking of iOS games, we're going to do just that in a moment with Garth on The Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Oh, and look, I've just made a mistake.
Woo! Yay! Yay!
Okay,
suck it!
Let's try and bring in the music. Here we go. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Give it up for the Hate Rock Trio. Although they call themselves HTRK these days. And that brings us to, this point here, right now.
How are those buttons going, Trent? Are they okay?
The best time of your life, right now. It's the Dice Men Cometh. It's Radio 99.3 FM. We're talking iOS games. Garth.
We are.
You love a bit of iPad action.
Do I ever? And I have been spending a fair bit of time with my iPad because there's been quite a few new releases out lately over the last couple of weeks. And I thought, why not, rather than just talk about a whole bunch of them, I'm just going to give a review on one, maybe two, depending on the time. So I thought I'd start with a bit of a favourite that we've had around the table a fair few times over the last few years, and it's quite...
Who's we? You're just sitting there doing this on the toilet, aren't you?
No, I'm talking about actual real games Ooh. That we've played on the table, and now they have made the electronic leap to my iPad, which the I then can play on the toilet.
E-leap, if you like.
Yes. So I'm going to talk about Coup, which I talked about this a couple of weeks ago before it was released, and I talked about it in relation to the Kickstarter that it had, because it didn't have an incredibly successful Kickstarter by its standards. I'm sure it only got to about $10,000 funding. If you remember, Mark, they wanted to do an Android version and they were only asking for $100,000, which they didn't get to. So it came out in the last week, and look, I don't feel like I really need to explain too much about Coup because it's such a well-worn mechanic. However, you know, it's basically a game of, I wrote down here, bluffing, deception, lying, stealing, deducing, guessing, memorizing, pushing your luck. Basically where each player, all you're trying to do is to be the last person standing. The way they define it is you want to be the last person with influence.
Yes.
And basically it works really, really well around the table. I mean, you guys have all played it. It's a fun little filler game. Takes about 10 minutes or so. Do you like it?
It's certainly one of the more fun games in that around the table quick genre where, you know, Werewolf tends to drag on a bit. Some of the other ones tend to drag on a bit. I like that it plays quite quick.
Coup is a game of hidden roles, though, on hidden cards. And Coup's the one where you've got two roles.
Yep.
And if people find out what both of those are, then you're out of the game. How the hell does that work on an iPad?
Exactly right, and that's why I wanted to give it a go because it. When you sit around the table, it's all about reading your other players going, oh, was that a twitch? Oh, were you really the ambassador or the captain or the duke? Are you doing this action because you legitimately can?
And when you do your ambassador action and swap cards, did you actually swap or did you just take the same one back?
Exactly
again?
Right. Yeah. So there's a whole bunch of really, you know, interesting around the table dynamics. And I wanted to give it a shot. So, look, it's basically the exact same game where you're playing turns, but it's a free app. However, let me just read all the stuff that you can purchase with this free app.
Oh, excellent. Oh, yes.
So the first thing is you can pay to remove ads, $3.79. Mm. You can pay for the Spies expansion, which is $6.49. Now, the Spies basically gives you a statistical history of your opponents. It tells you which character they play, yes. How often do they bluff, okay. What's their winning percentage, $6.59
worth
of information.
It turns you into a card counter.
Yeah, sort of like that. You can pay for chat packs, ooh, which allow you to say, I'm the Duke. No, get out of town, I'm the Duke. All of that kind of thing. You can pay for alternate cards because there's a couple of different card packs, yeah. $4.99. You can buy three of those, $4.99 each. You can pay for reputation. Reputation is the currency in the game, which I'll talk about in a moment. Now, I added all of the potential upgrades that you could buy, and that comes to around about $30.
Jeez.
I then thought, you know, I might compare this to an actual physical game that you can buy. So I just jumped onto one of the websites for one of our friendly local game shops. You want to know how much they were selling the actual physical game for?
About.
I would have said $25 or less. Yeah.
$18.75.
There you go.
So you could actually get the tangible real copy and play with real friends for about two-thirds of the price of this, you know, completed app version.
And is this... So are you playing against Ultron, or you're playing against real people?
No, you are playing against real people, which is really, really cool. So the way it works is you can choose to play with your friends, and you can create your friends through the game center, or you can get the game, the list through, you know, other people in your networks who have got the app downloaded. Yep. Or the way I've been playing it, because I don't have many friends, is just with randoms all over the world, which is really, really good. Now, the way it works is you basically have to pay an entry fee. And this is where the reputation comes into it, because you pay 50 or 100 reputation to be in part of the game. And you then win four times that reputation back because you're playing against three other players. So you gain more reputation that way. And I think that's a good mechanic for encouraging you to play longer, because it gets you to, you know, look after that more reputation. But what it also does is it opens up more game styles, because the first base level, tier one, everyone gets 10 minutes per round. So I can sit back and make my decision in 10 minutes' time, which means a 10-minute game overall that you play around the table can last for over an hour.
Wow, yeah.
You know, as you get to Tier 3, which is the next breaking point, it goes to 5 minutes per round. And then from Tier 4, it's 3 minutes per turn. So as you play longer, it actually becomes a bit more in real time, yes. Which I thought is really good, but you've got to wade through it because in order to progress the challenges, you've got to have completed certain tasks.
No,
you've got to...
I still don't understand how this works with the hidden roles.
Well, it works because the way around goes is obviously all you're doing is you've got your two cards in front of you. You do the same thing that you do at the table, which is I'm going to draw tax because I'm the Duke. And then
But then I say, no, you're not. Exactly I'm the Duke. Right.
And then I say, okay, I press, I'm going to allow your challenge. Press. Oh. And then I just, that's me going, oh, actually, I'm not the Duke anymore. So
are you passing iPad?
No, because it's all done with anyone else in the internet space.
So everyone just has their own iPad.
Exactly right.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not a pass and play.
Right.
You just hold it there. It's for iPhones and it's for iPads. Mm. It's not for your Android devices. But yeah, you can basically play it anywhere. You get little reminders on your phone if you've logged out for a couple of minutes. But the game itself works really quite quickly when you've got three or four people who are actually there concentrating on the game. And that's one of my main concerns with it, apart from all the upsells, is that you're relying on these other people who might be checking in every 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a really fun game. I really like Coup. I don't think this is, you know, the best way to be playing it. I'd much rather get it around the table. I must admit, after playing it, I played about half a dozen, maybe 10 games or so in the last couple of days. I then went onto Kickstarter and I then backed One Night Ultimate Coup Resistance thing, werewolf thing, whatever that is. So maybe you'll have to play that with me when we get it.
But for $30, you can play this on the toilet.
No, for nothing you can play it on the toilet. You just have to put up with ads.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So, look, I really think it's fun. If you can get a bunch of mates there, you know, and they've all downloaded the app, then you'd play it really quickly.
All in the toilet together.
Well, it depends what you
four
do in the toilet.
Four individual toilets.
Okay.
As long as all four of you have the app on your respective phones, in your respective toilets, in your own houses, in the privacy of your own space, I don't really care. It's a good, fun game. I don't think it's the best way to play this game, yeah. But it's just something that's a little bit different, I've found. You know, there's a lot of other games there, like Puerto Rico, that you can get where it doesn't really matter whether you're playing real people or not, or they're on the toilet or not. This one, it's about how quick you can get the game round. And if you stick with it, it actually gets really good.
It's like being on the toilet.
Exactly right.
I can guarantee that no one's going to want to play Coup with you anymore after hearing this.
Or touch your iPad knowing it's been in the toilet.
Okay, coming up next, we're going to take a trip to Niagara Falls, or Niagara Falls, as it was pointed out that you spell it that way to me earlier this evening. Eos James, friend of the show, he's a refugee from the Board Game Nights podcast. He's going to tell us about his trip to the Gathering of Friends next on The Dice Man Cometh. This is Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
Dice Man Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. That was at Atson's with Shaky Mirrors.
You rock, Launceston.
Yeah. Speaking of shaky, Trent had a chat with the... Had a chat.
No, wait. Wait, I had a what? I told you, I don't play these iOS games with Garth, all right?
Trent wasn't on the toilet when he had a chat with our good friend, Eos James, from the Board Games Night podcast, and he's just been to a very exclusive event. Let's hear what he and Trent had to say.
Oh, no!
Yeah! Third time lucky! Button failure.
That's okay. That's two mistakes I've made in this show tonight.
Do you need to take Baxi card for that, Trent?
I think I might. All right, let's try this. All right, here's my chat. Eos James, mad about Townsville, ardent gamer and recent attendee at the Gathering of Friends. We'll find out all about that in just a moment. He joins us now on The Dice Man Cometh. Eos, how are ya?
G'day, mate. How you going?
All right, mate. Welcome back to Australia. Belatedly, you got back last week as the body clock adjusted and stuff.
Yeah, only just. Still tired.
Let's start at the beginning. The Gathering of Friends, what is this?
It's the best. Well, it's a convention set up by Alan Moon from Ticket to Ride fame, I think 27 years ago.
Yep.
So he set up a convention for 5,000 million of his closest friends, as he has. Well, I'm not sure how big it was initially. I think it was probably about 30 people or so, and that's grown over the years. So he just invites along his friends and a lot of publishers, a lot of designers, and now extended invite via recommendations. And I was in the right place at the right time. Yeah, I managed to snag an invite of 10 days of gaming madness at Niagara Falls in the USA.
I have never been more jealous of anyone ever, anywhere, at any time. Congratulations.
Well, I'd like to say it's unwarranted, but yeah. That's...
So you're up at Niagara Falls, not taking in any of the scenery at all, just staying indoors the whole time at this invitation-only exclusive gaming retreat. How wonderful.
Yeah, I didn't actually go and see the falls until the last night. I saw them. I crossed over from Canada into America. I crossed over the bridge and saw the falls and thought, that's cool. Let's go play some games. And apparently on the last night at dinner, some people were saying that I had to go and see the falls. So they took me to the Canada side, which is a much better view. And we had a look at the falls, which was... I can tick that off now.
All right, onto the important stuff. What were you playing? And this is the stuff we really want to hear about because, you know, I was seeing some posts on your Facebook page and you're playing an awful lot of things that are still being play tested, stuff that just hasn't made it over to these shores yet.
Well, I got to play Seafall, which was good.
Yeah, okay, so this is the Legacy-style game from Rob Davio. How was that?
Yeah, it was fantastic. It didn't disappoint. It's currently being playtested at the moment by 70 playtest groups. So the game that I played, or the version I played, is going to be a lot changed from that. But as you can imagine, it's like Risk Legacy without the risk. So it's all the good stuff from Risk Legacy and made better by an excellent game, which is Seafall. So he's made a great system that incorporates a lot more into it. It's almost like a choose your own adventure in a good way. So there's still a lot of game in there, but things that you do on particular... So you in Seafall, you're a seafaring one, so you go out and explore islands. It's sort of like a choose your own adventure, and you go and explore a particular part of an island, and you'll have a story that goes with that. Mm-hmm. So in Plaid Hat style, very story-driven, but there's still a lot of game and a lot of choices in there.
And can you see the way it might evolve over time?
Yeah, well, as all the players develop, you can go to an island and you can buy stuff off the natives, for example, or you can take it by force. If you take it by force, they get an enmity token. Next time you go back there, you either get charged more money or their defenses are raised against you. So right. Pretty much they hate you. Yeah. And if you do it multiple times, they hate you more and more, and it becomes increasingly hard to do that. Same thing goes for other players. So if you attack other players, they get enmity tokens against you, and they have increased defenses, and it just makes it harder for you to do anything the nice way or the hard way. It's just, they're both hard.
Sounds great. Any other titles you want to talk about?
Yeah, Time Stories. Not too sure how much I can say about it. Mm-hmm. I know that it's being released by Space Cowboys.
Okay, so this is a time travel game, is it?
Yeah, so it's along the same theme as Tragedy Looper, which you are agents or time travel agents, and you'll be sent backwards at the moment, possibly forwards and other worlds potentially, but you'll be sent in time to a place to rectify something, whether you have to ensure that something happens or ensure that something doesn't happen. And it's very story driven, so there's a lot of story in it. The artwork was great, and I think that it's going to come out as a base set, and then it's going to be releasing scenarios that you can play as a group.
Have you signed something where you're not supposed to be talking about this, Aeos?
No, but I have an agreement that if I want to go back to the Gathering of Friends, I probably can't say... I don't know what I can say about it. I can probably talk a bit more. There's no real secrets I can give away. I can't tell you any of the plot or any of those sorts of stories.
Let's just move on. Talk about something else.
Played a prototype of Tom Lehman's. Yeah, that was very good as well.
Of Race of the Galaxy fame, of course, yes.
Yes. That's called Artifacts, and... Yeah, probably can't say too much more on that one too.
But is it anything to do with Race of the Galaxy, or is it actually an entirely new property?
No, it's an entirely new property.
Oh, thank God.
So completely standalone game.
So who else was there, man?
Yeah, designer-wise, obviously Alan Moon, the host of the show, Mike Fitzgerald, Tom Lehman, Colby Dowk, Rob Davio, Vlada Shvarl.
Oh, Vlada was there! Did you meet Vlada?
He was a great man.
Is he nice?
He's very humble. Yeah. Asked him for a photo, and he sort of looks at you like, why would you want one? nervous little, okay, I'll take a photo with you. Yeah, I've got to play a game with him. But yeah, he's very, very humble. I think he just cares more about creating games, having fun with games, than standing in the spotlight. He was a lot of fun to play with. I played with Friedman Fries, William Adia, and Ted Alsbach as well.
Oh. My God.
Ted is a lot of fun. So is Friedman Fries. He sits there and runs people down.
He's just nuts.
He is just nuts.
Yeah.
He's out there.
What color is his hair at the moment?
Certainly very green. Some other prototypes I got to play were, one was 504, which he's been working on for 3 years. But it's called 504 because that's the number of permutations that the game can create. What it is, it's not so much a game as a game system, and it involves 9 different types of game. For example, racing, stocks, war or military, trading. I'm not sure if these are all the attributes, but there's 9 different types of game. And then you have 3 levels per game that you play. So there'll be the major level, which might be war, for example, or the military thing. So the main aspect of this particular game will be war. Then there'll be the second aspect, which may be race. And then the third aspect might be stocks. So you can buy stocks in the other players. And it's very weird and hard to explain.
Yeah.
But I'll find different types of game that you have. You can have all these different permutations and have a very different game each time.
Sounds like a typical cluster from Friedman.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in constant play over the 10 days at the gathering. So it was, just talked about a lot, played a lot. My only regret was playing it once, because playing it once, I don't really know how the game plays, because it's got so many, it's just so different each time, I imagine. Another one that I got to playtest, actually, I can't talk about it, but it's from Ted Alsbach, and as you can imagine, it's one of those great Ted Alsbach games, which we love so much. So,
a real revelation, Aos. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about that one. Can't say anything about that. But also met Scott Alden, and just went up and said thank you very much for Board Game Geek. played with Scott Nicholson and Tom Vassell, and which was great. And I met Zev Slazenger and Stephen Bonnegal, which are also great to play with.
How was Tom in the flesh?
Tom was great. I was actually not so much surprised. He was very much in line with how he is online, yeah, which was good to see. So he's very respectful of people, and I just sort of come up and said, oh, you playing a game? He's like, sure, sit down, but I'm playing all these games that I've got to test. I'm like, that's cool. So he's got a really good ability for grabbing a game, getting the rule book out, reading it, and teaching it at almost zero downtime. It's just,
wow.
I haven't seen anyone that good before.
He's a machine.
Yeah, he is a machine. I was a little bit fanboy, I suppose, but he was really good to play with too. He's very dramatic and animated, and everything was fun for him. And I think that to play that many, shall I say, crappy games in amongst all of the good ones that he plays to keep upbeat, I'm sure that he has to, stay fun. So it was just all about, interactions and good and bad and drama. It was a lot of fun.
So listen, Aos, about next year.
Fortunately or unfortunately, I can't make any recommendations myself.
you can connect us. You can hook us up. Yeah,
you need to talk to the right people.
Yeah, right. I thought that's what I was doing.
You're like, damn it, wrong guy.
All right, now, look, the most important question I have for you, how did you convince your wife and children that you could go to the other side of the world for 10 days and play games? Because I want to know what your secret is.
Well, I think I was just blessed in having an awesome wife that probably, I don't know, she encourages me a lot and wants me to do these things, which is good.
Good on you. As I say, very, very jealous. Now, if we want to hear more about your trip, tell us about your podcast. When's that coming out?
I'm not sure at the moment. I'll keep you updated.
Okay. But... Well, look, you can find the Board Game Nights with a K on iTunes and subscribe. All right.
Yep. And Facebook.
Yes. All right. Board Game Nights. Aos will be on there. talking in depth about his experience at the Gathering of Friends. I'm so jealous, you mongrel.
It was very good. Everyone should go.
Congratulations, mate. Look forward to catching up with you at BorderCon, eh?
Yes.
Eos and Trent there talking about Gathering of Friends. That sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. Vlada, Alan Moon, Friedman Freeze. I have got to get there somehow.
Yeah, you got to play a game with Vassal as well.
Oh, I know. Everyone who was anyone was there. Anyway, look, let's go to a song. Let's come back and draw our competition.
Have Woo-hoo!
A
go.
Going off, Hypnotized, Edge Radio 99.3 FM, talking board games with the Dice Men Cometh, Trent, Mark and Garth, and our Growl Games competition that we've been running for the past couple of weeks. Thanks to David Harding from Growl Games for providing
fantastic.
Us Definitely. With a bunch of great little games, Elevenses and 101, copies thereof to give away. I've not played 101. Elevenses is a fantastic little sort of filler game with a theme of morning teas, so it's, you know, really fresh and different. 101, any good?
Yeah, so Garth and I played it a couple of times, and it's a game of sort of old school computer programs, isn't it, Garth?
Definitely. Well, it's the game of binary, and I know that there's nothing much more exciting than that, but I think, look, for another little short game, it's really, really clever. The really simple mechanic is one player is the zeros, and another player is the ones, and you're just trying to control lines of code. Various lines of code are worth respective victory points, or I don't know what computer terminology we could use for points, but
bloop, 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 bloop,
yeah,
bloop, bloop.
Exactly right. Maybe we'd need some nerdy computer people to tell us what that is. But look, you again start with an identical card of deck of cards where you've got some cards where all they do is claim some territory. Mm. So you might play a zero card, and that is adding one to your influence on that line of code. Or you've then got a couple of other ones that'll just give you some special abilities that will allow you to delete a line, which is delete one of your opponent's numbers, or you get to copy and paste, or you get to run syntax errors, which just screws up the whole game. It plays in about 10 minutes. Mark and I have played 3-4 games in not so much time. It's great fun.
And I really loved it. It reminded me of old school computer programming, you know, if then else, if then loops and
CDOS. CDOS, yeah, run. Absolutely. Run, DOS, run.
10 print, you're an idiot. 20 go to 10.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Oh, it did remind me of all that good stuff, but it's great fun for a short little game. Great for two-player throwdown. We played it on a table in the pub. Fantastic.
And we've been trying to give these away by getting people to tell us about their Grail games. These are the games that they've made up in their head that they've always wanted to play. Look, we've chosen our winners, and we have picked some of the best entries, but we wanted to read out a couple before we got to them. So David Franklin sent in his Grail game is called Android Ticket to Settlers of Carcassonne, the Zombie Munchkin Edition Big Box. I hope the title makes it self-explanatory, he says. The game would represent the ultimate shark jump for the board gaming hobby, and yet, sadly, he would probably buy it anyway. He says, David, I think you might have a problem.
And I think that must be on a Kickstarter soon, surely. Yeah, so we'll see it in 5 years' time.
And so Rob Torek, he didn't talk about so much about what the game would be about, but talking about how it would feel, that he'd love it, that his wife would love it, that his kids would love it, that it plays equally well with 2, 3, 4, many more. It's easy to learn, but has lots of depth. No dominant strategy, no silly or inconsistent wording, no stupid rules. The theme fits the mechanic, and it looks nice, and it feels good.
I was looking at that list that Rob sent in, and I couldn't think of anything that actually ticked all those boxes, so he may be onto something.
Yeah, that's right. Any more?
Let's see. I've got one from Chris Mann, who says, look, if we're talking no limits, no end to the possibilities, there's an easy answer. Jumanji. He says, I mean, yes, it's just a roll and move with an expected playtime of around 40 years. But on the other hand, you can have a real jungle experience while playing it. And when you finish the game, it packs itself neatly away and winds back everything so that no time has actually passed. Thanks, Chris, for your entry.
You'd want to have a good game last 40 years, wouldn't you? Now, should we get to the pointy end of the competition?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so we're going to start with number 3. I think that makes perfect sense. And look, I want to tip my hat to this entry because he made the effort to contribute some audio. Mm. And that was unique amongst our participants, which is great. So I want to announce that third place is going to Martin, the Cryptic Badger.
Hello again, Dice Man. This is Cryptic Badger here with a second tilt at the goodies. What is my grail game? Well, picture if you will a combination of two of the greatest game franchises in history. That board game classic, Badgers of Catan, and the open world video game juggernaut that is Grand Theft Badger. In this resource management, badger placement game, you must grow your omnivore crew and set out on a grand adventure. Eschewing the traditional and well-passed used by Dave 4X growth mechanic, this game instead employs the superior 4BLUH model, as you blunder, bludgeon, bluff, and bluster your way to victory. Each player controls a different species of badger, including the European, Asian, Japanese, American, and hog badgers. Through careful and cunning play, you must seek just enough common ground to aid your progress, while leaving enough wiggle room to backstab without repercussion.
Thank you to the Cryptic Badger for sending that in. Martin, if we can ask you, if you're going to send us more of that audio, just tweak the voice effect so you're a little bit easier to understand, and we'll play more next time, all right? So, but congratulations, third prize. He wins a copy of...
Well, I think... is there a hint of an English accent in there?
It certainly sounds like it.
I reckon it's got to be Elevensies. I'm sure he likes a nice cup of tea.
Although... I think, wouldn't the honey badger just win every time? Because he don't give a shit.
No, honey badger don't care.
Yeah, that's right. So second place with a game, I love the sound of it. It's Pantry Master Supreme. It's a deck-building game with mission cards. Players take turns shopping, preparing meals and feeding their family and compete to have the best-fed family in town. You lay out the food item cards face up in sets, shuffle your mission cards and place in the pack face down your dealt ingredients, your missions, your money, and a kitchen disaster card.
Oh, no!
It sounds like an edition of My Kitchen Rules. On your turn, you shop to stock your pantry. You have a kitchen disaster, and, of course, you've got to fix it. You complete your mission, you roll the home for dinner dice to see how many people come and you have to feed, and then if you've got enough ingredients, you can feed them. You collect your money at the end, and the game finishes when one player completes their fifth meal. We could just kickstart this right now. Just film a funny video.
I just want to really tip my hat to... Who is it that put that entry in?
Daniel Chapman from right here in Tassie, from Launceston. I mean, we know Launceston's just going off on Facebook at the moment. and the title of Pantry Master Supreme is given to the player who has the most points.
I think that's great. And I want to really commend the amount of effort, because this is board game dot points... exactly how you play it.
Fantastic.
He's clearly thought it out. I think, you know, another one
Daniel,
we can see on Kickstarter.
We want to see this on Kickstarter soon. I think it'll make a great game.
And for a bit of inspiration, you've won a copy of 101.
Fantastic. Congratulations, Daniel. Well done. And the grand winner.
Okay, shout out to Corey Edwards.
Woo-hoo!
Who has look I'll just read this because it's fabulous. My holy grail of board gaming is a game that no longer exists. Oh, you can still buy it. It's still for sale. The problem is that although the rules and the box and the components have all stayed the same, Castle Risk will never be the game I remember as an 11-year-old. No matter how many times I play it as an adult, it will never live up to the memory I have of it over a quarter of a century ago. The game hasn't changed, but I have, and I wish I could recapture those heady days of my childhood. My holy grail game is one whose physical pieces remain, but whose soul has diminished greatly over time.
Oh.
I know, I wept a little tear when I read that. And Corey, you know, we're all about just paying homage to that that child within.
Definitely.
No, because we're all just overgrown man children. I mean, let's face it.
Well, it's all about suspending your disbelief, isn't it? You know, living in an alternate reality in some way, shape, or form, and going back in time is a perfect way to represent that. And that was beautiful.
Pretending to be halflings or...
excuse me. I am currently Pjorn, the Pelioth Paladin.
Paladin.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Anyway, so Corey wins a copy of both fantastic games, 101 and Elevensies. We'll be getting those to you shortly. Thanks so much again to David Harding from Grail Games for giving us those games to give away. They are great little games. They are Australian games, designed and produced, so fantastic.
It's awesome. I just want to say thanks to Grail Games. It's such a wonderful way for you to, you know, help us put Australian gaming, you know, spread the word for it. It's just a beautiful thing.
More in a moment. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's The Dice Men Cometh. False Hope from the Terrible Truths on The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent, Mark and Garth, almost out of here for another Thursday evening. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for downloading, however it is that you're actually listening to the show. And a reminder that if you're going to be coming along to BorderCon, which is, I've forgotten the dates already.
5th to the 8th of June, the Queen's birthday long weekend.
Yes, in Albury / Wodonga. Then we're going to be there.
So yeah.
Come up and say hello.
And remember, if you're not going to go, or if you are and you happen to be in Melbourne, come along and play a game with us, have a beverage perhaps even, at the Games Laboratory at their gaming bar on the Thursday before, which is the 4th of June. We're going to be there that evening as a pre-road trip to head up. Now, one of the things that happens at BorderCon is a mass exchange of games as part of the BorderCon no-ship math trade.
The math trade, right. I was hoping you were going to talk about this because I still don't understand what a math trade is.
Make
although
that too.
It sounds nerdy.
And I just want to make sure, you said no-ship with a P?
Yeah. Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah, you can...
Get your mind out of the toilet.
Yeah, you can
off
sell.
Off the iOS device.
No, I just thought it was maybe it's how you offload your games that are a bit crappy.
Hey!
One person's crap is another person's treasure anyway. So the math trade happens on Board Game Geek. So firstly, you need to search BorderCon 2015 math trade.
So I could access that on my iPad.
On the toilet, yes.
There you go, Trent.
Don't only use your left hand. Anyway, so you go to Board Game Geek. You go find the forum post for the 2015 Border No Ship with a P, math trade. And what you have to do, firstly, is you put your list of games that you want to sell. That's the first thing. Now, it is very important. You have to have them on there by 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on May the 4th be with you.
Star Wars
Day. Yeah, that's right. So you've only actually got another 4 days to get on. That's from live. So if you're listening to the podcast, hurry up. So you get on there, and there's full instructions. So I didn't know how to do this 2 years ago when we first went to BorderCon, and I did participate. There's very sound instructions. So you basically got to work out what games you want to get rid of. That's the first step. Mm-hmm. Then you look and you see what other people are getting rid of, and you work out what you'd be happy to accept. Now, you can accept cash. You can accept other games. What happens then is everyone puts their sell lists and their want lists into a big computer thingy.
And it goes beep, 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 beep.
That's
beep.
Right. And the program will spit out a special code.
When it spits out, does it go bing?
Something like that. And a little cardboard punched card comes out. And someone goes, aha! And I don't know why. Anyway, but then the computer will basically match up everyone. So it's like the world's biggest daisy chain where I pass game A to you, you pass game B to the next person, they pass game C to the next person, and eventually I get given a game. So I don't have to give you a game, Garth, that you want, and then you give me a game. It means...
So it's not a human gaming centipede.
Well, it is in a way. It is in a nice way. But what it means is you've got a really good chance of getting the thing that you want. Okay? And what you can do is when you put your game, your wants list up, you can put multiple things that you're willing to accept in exchange. So you can say, look, I'm going to give up Cleopatra and the Society of Architects, and I'll take a copy of Railways of the World, a copy of Race for the Galaxy, $50, or to be the last man in the centipede. And then the computer will go through and it'll try and match as many of those people as possible. Now, there will be people that don't match up and they will miss out.
Okay.
But you can also get cash. So, look, it's a great way to move your game around. If you're not going to BorderCon, find someone who is and mule it up.
I really did hope we were going to get through episode 69 without any toilet humour, but wasn't to be. But I am glad that no one made a joke about daisy chains. That's it for us on the show tonight. We'll catch you next week on The Dice Man Cometh. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Man Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.